Welcome to Go Yard with Mama Mac, helping you to hit a home run in life when you feel like striking out.
All right, here we go. It is time for our weekly Go Yard show, life coaching show. We love being here in the studio every week to do this show. We've been doing it now 3.5 years. Dr. Angel, my co-host, Dr. Angel Falzone, licensed mental health counselor and PhD, and our resident expert, don't you think, for all these topics.
Yes, we have been doing this for quite a while, huh?
We have, but don't you love it still?
I mean,
and we encourage our audience to get involved, and sometimes we say, hey, you can call in. Tonight's not one of those, but you can write us emails with questions, so we can do a question-answer show soon, goyard2014@gmail.com, best way to do that, 2014, because that's the year we began the show. GoYard2014@gmail.com. Send in your questions, because Dr. Angel will be compiling some soon for a Q&A show. I think our audience loves to hear how other people feel and questions that they have, don't you?
Oh, I do. I think it's one of our more popular type of show format.
Yeah, I think it is too. So we want some fresh material, so send in your problems. How about that? We started a new series last week, Teens Out of Control. And, you know, this is such a common problem, Dr. Angel. It's everywhere. But it occurred to me, and kind of thinking about this, teens are very much in control, aren't they? And we're going to talk about why we are saying that. In one aspect, they are out of control. Do you want to talk about that? Not all teens, of course.
But no, teens can definitely seem out of control with their behaviors, with, you know, being physically or verbally abusive or aggressive towards other people, you know, not going to school or dropping out of school or failing school, committing crimes, using drugs, joining gangs, running away from home. These kinds of things feel out of control.
And they are. I mean, those are bad things, really. And we'd like to say that, oh, that's a small portion of the population in America. I don't know that it is anymore. Do you want to comment on that? Maybe you know that. I don't know.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I just had a conversation with someone who works in a local middle school, and she, in middle school, was talking about how 30% of the people in her school think there's no problem with hitting the principal or cursing the principal out of the school.
Whoa, seriously?
Seriously.
30% of the students think there's no problem?
No problem with cursing the principal or even getting physically aggressive with the principal.
Well, that shows that's a huge problem in America. Well, and it goes to lack of respect, which we're going to talk about maybe next week, not tonight. But this whole thing of teens being so so often controlled by their emotions, right? And by maybe laziness and whatever. Right?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of different things driving this. And it feels like when you have one of those teens that, or you're constantly getting those phone calls from the school, or they're just disappearing, or you know there's, you know, things going on, and you don't want to confront them because you're going to get the anger and the backlash and it's going to get ugly. We feel like the teen's out of control. But the problem is the teen's fully in control. It's the family.
Whoa.
The teen is in control of the family.
All right. I think you need to say that again, because that's a bell ringer too. It's not that teens are out of control, which is the title of the series, but in some aspects, but it is that they are in
control. So out of control is really controlling the entire family.
Boing. Don't you think that's so important? Because that is what happens. Mm-hmm. And they're controlling how even mom and dad interact. And a lot of times families are broken and there's not the same biological parents raising these kids, right? And that is part of our society. That's part of our society,
sure,
these days.
But the family, they're hostage,
yeah,
to this out of control team. And it wrecks their whole family system. And so what happens is, here comes mom or dad or both, and they're dropping this teen, and they're like, this teen is a problem, fix this teen.
And that's what they bring you to?
Fix the teen. And I have to step back and say, first of all, if we have a problem with anybody in our house, it's a family problem. It is not a one-person problem.
Right.
And so the treatment happens only in the scope of the entire family. And that's hard for
parents I was going to say, get. Isn't that hard for some people? Because we are all very good at blaming others, right? Everybody, humankind is good at that. And so I would imagine there's a lot of parents across America that wouldn't like that statement that it's a family problem because they think it's Junior's problem or you know, her problem, the teenage girl or whatever. And it's not. Any, you know, they don't have to work on anything.
They absolutely believe that. And I'll hear comments of, this isn't my problem. I'm not the one acting this way. You know, I'm just fine. And no, it is a family problem. It affects this entire system of this family. And so it can only be worked on through the system of the family.
So I know that when a lot of kids go through like a 28-day program with, you know, in a facility or whatever, that a part of that treatment involves bringing mom and dad and the family members in. So it's for this very reason, right?
Absolutely. And here's another thing. Actually, you bring up a good point talking about programs. I hear all the time where a parent's like threatening the kid, I'm just going to send you to a program. Well, the reality of that is really not true because there's very, very few programs. And most of the time, my experience is kids come back from these programs with more bad behaviors. They learn new bad things to do.
Right.
And they're not really that effective anyway. Exist that much.
They really don't anymore, do they? But in some of those rehabs in the past, there's been contacts made. Teens make contacts with somebody else who may be, an actual dealer, drug dealer, or whatever.
So what I see when kids do come out of programs is that they've learned a whole lot of new bad stuff.
So then, you know, in one aspect, that's really disconcerting. In that it looks like there's no hope for these kids that are controlling the whole family and out of control themselves personally. It almost is very fatalistic, right?
It feels that way. I know it feels that way, especially when you're in it. But the truth is it's not fatalistic. The family can get help. Things can improve. It's not a magic pill, and it's not going to happen overnight.
Wow. Okay. So you're saying there's hope.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely believe that. I watch hope happen all the time.
Okay.
So, these out-of-control teens are really holding everyone in that family very hostage with their behavior. Parents are afraid of their kids'
behavior.
Give
us an example. Somebody out there may be saying, I don't know what that means, holding the family hostage.
Oh, I can give you a lot of examples.
Please give us a few.
We have a teen. I had a teen who stole parents' checkbook, wrote checks for cash. Parents couldn't pay the bills while they were out buying drugs with the cash. Well, that was a crime. You had money stolen from you. You should call the police. Oh, no. Oh, no. I can't do that because then they wouldn't be able to get into college. And what would happen if they got arrested? And then they'd really be mad and have to come back in my house. And like all these no's.
That is a very good example because I have seen this several times with people that is what they're afraid of. They are afraid of all of the above. And so they try their best to walk on eggshells around the troubled teen, right?
Absolutely.
Because they don't want to turn them into the law when they really probably should. You're
Absolutely.
Saying they should.
Absolutely, we should. You know, choices have consequences, and the more you save them for those consequences, the more out of control their behavior gets.
Wow. But so many people, so many adults do not want their kids being in an environment in jail, even temporarily, right?
No, they don't want them to have to pay that consequence, so they're trying to save them from it. So they are in hostage. They don't want to confront the teen if they can kind of come and go when they want. They don't want that drama that can happen or that unpredictable behavior.
Well, is it also a shame on the family sometimes?
Oh,
my kid's
much.
In jail or my kid's in prison. I mean, that's a hard thing to acknowledge.
It is. I worked with a family one time, and both parents had pretty prestigious in their community, and they had a horrendous out of control. He was a teen and then became a out of control young adult, and he would, you know, get very physically violent with both his parents, stealing from the house, to the point these parents decided they wanted to move out of their own house and just let him keep the house because they didn't want him ruining their life.
Now that is an excellent example because it's so outrageous.
They were so embarrassed of his behaviors, they couldn't let anybody know what was really happening under the scenes.
But such a drastic option to move out of your own home and turn it into a drug den or whatever
right.
it might be.
Absolutely.
Seriously?
That was how they felt in their own home. They had to get out. They couldn't do it anymore. They couldn't stand not knowing what was going to pen them up and, you know, get him angry at them.
What did you say? Good idea, parents?
I said absolutely not.
Okay.
That is not a good idea. And, you know, sometimes people take good counsel, sometimes they don't. And they didn't, and they tried that way. It didn't work, and things ran a bad course for them. But there is hope and there is help.
Okay. So, all right. So a lot of times what I hear you saying is that parents and siblings and maybe grandparents and whoever's involved get very afraid of the troubled teen.
Oh, very.
I'm not going to call him or her an out of control teen, because now that you've just explained, that's really not a good title. But the troubled teen, a lot of times, generates a whole lot of fear and anxiety in all those around that person.
It does.
Even a girl. It doesn't have to be a guy, right?
Absolutely. Here's my experience. So when less girls exhibit some of these more aggressive behaviors. However, when girls do have it, they're worse than the boys.
So why would you say that?
They are. They can become more aggressive than the boys ever have been. So I feel like there are less girls who have some of these issues. Now, drug abuse, I think, is kind of one of those similar across genders. But when we're looking at, like, joining gangs and getting very aggressive and violent crimes, we see more of the boys in that. But when girls get in that, they're worse.
They're bad. Mm-hmm. Really bad. Well, that's all kind of scary. Okay. So for parents that have really given up control, mm-hmm. because it's an act of your will to surrender, correct me if I'm wrong, to surrender to these troubled teens and say, I just wish you wouldn't act like that, honey. Please, just don't act like that, whatever. And yet just kind of lay down and let them walk all over you, or let them run the house, or let them steal from you and there's no consequences, you know?
Absolutely. And that's what a lot of families sit back and do. And the behaviors don't go away. And the problem is that once they learn they can steal from you, they're going to start learning they can steal from other people and not expecting consequences, except other people don't care if your kid's going to not get into the right college or not. They are going to call the police and they are going to deal with it with law enforcement.
Oh, wow. Okay. So let's say the parent has a crisis situation, because I, in my experience, there's usually this kind of behavior comes to some major point. Am I wrong with that?
What do you mean?
A crisis happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crisis happens. I mean, you just don't go along like this for 40 years or even 10 years. It escalates. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
And it does escalate, yes.
It escalates. Why does it escalate?
Well, the more a teen learns that my behavior does not have consequences, the more a teen learns that what they can get away with, the more they're going to push that.
Okay. And do they like that feeling of mom and dad are just so afraid of me, or so scared that I'll do something drastic, or they're afraid that I'll move out or whatever? Do they like that sense of...
It gives them control.
Control?
And they do.
Yeah.
I mean, teens, hello, it's about independency, teenhood.
Right.
And so that sense of control can definitely, ignite some of those behaviors. They want that control and mastery.
Oh, yeah.
And when I have mom and dad in the palm of my hand, that's some big control.
That's exactly right. So, wow. All right. So
the first thing families have to do is parents got to get control of their house back.
Right.
They got to take the reins back. Doesn't mean it's going to make it all better tomorrow, but we got to have rules and consequences, and we got to go through these consequences no matter what that backlash is.
Oh, but now, okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate. What about the teen that says, and you set him down and say, all right, you know, here's what's going to be from now on. Here's the rules, here's the consequences. And the teen just gets up and walks out in the middle of the conversation, or says a whole bunch of bad words to the parents, and then explodes, throws something, whatever, and leaves, and pays no attention. I mean, in other words, whatever you say or whatever you threaten, they could care less.
Well, you know, and there are a lot of teens that don't care less. But the truth is they do care, and if you start following through with these things, so if you're going to walk out without permission, that's running away. I'm calling the police.
Okay.
I don't have to give you the code to the internet. That's something we can earn. You don't have to have a smartphone or a phone. I can have that turned off. Do you see what I'm saying? We can get to their...
Well, I totally agree. But how many
parents
do those kinds of difficult things?
These kids have their phone and access to all the things, their comforts is what I like to call them. You know, they're still getting the designer shoes and the designer clothes and driving cars. Why do they get the keys to the car when they're acting that way? That shouldn't be.
Right.
So when parents can find what motivates their kid, and every kid has their motivation.
And most of them, I think, has to do with independence and a car.
Oh, independence in a car, electronics. You know, why are you paying that child's cell phone bill when they have zero respect for you and your rules? Why?
Okay, so going along with that, then would you be advocating, I'm putting you on the spot, would you
That's
advocate
okay.
that teenagers, when they're at least 16 and have a driver's license, get a job?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with, you know, freedom comes responsibility. And what's happening is our kids are getting freedom without responsibility.
But a lot of parents would say, well, they're going to be working the rest of their lives. So I just don't want poor little Johnny having to go deliver pizza or whatever her name is, Sally, Mary, whatever it is, babysitting till 3 a.m. Or I just don't want them to have to go through that. You know, I had to do that as a teenager and it just wasn't fun. So I really don't want my kids to have to go through that. I'm playing devil's advocate.
No, you're actually given a scenario that I hear all the time. And so that's one of the ways some of our families really get off trajectory is, I had this experience, I felt it was negative, and I want to save my kids from this experience. Getting a job, doing chores, you know, having a consequence, you know, my parents were too strict, you know, those kinds of feelings. And then they project that on their kid. I don't want my kid to feel that way, so I'm not going to be that parent. And their kid's completely out of control, and they don't know why.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you a question about that scenario. Would that be a parent who really has not been able to look back and see the benefits of the perhaps parameters, boundaries that the parents laid down for that teen, and they're still angry about all that for themselves?
It could be parents that have not worked through their own. Yeah, you know, and a lot of time it is they haven't really worked through their own histories and what they felt was negative in their history. Instead of looking at what did this develop in me? It taught me how, you know, to be responsible, how to hold a job, how to save my money, how to buy things and take care of things that, you know, I have an investment in things.
So a lot of parents haven't come to those conclusions.
Right. If they're still feeling like, oh, this was so bad for me when I was a kid, I don't want my kids to have to experience it.
This is a very important
something to look
point
at.
Because I think a lot of parents go into debt needlessly for designer purses and clothes and shoes. And I mean, a pair of shoes for most teen boys now is $150.
Absolutely,
I mean, shoes they want, I know because I have grandsons, you know, and they save up, you know. And I, once in a while, and I have done this, I'll say, okay, you need a new pair of shoes for basketball. I get it. I will pay this much of it. And you have to be responsible for the other. So when you get your part, then come talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've handled my two grandsons that are seniors in high school right now that way when it comes to them being here on spring break. And Nana, I need this and I need that. They're really good now. But when they were a little younger, they were kind of, you know, not as good as they are now about that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's teaching our kids limits. And life
right.
has limits. We all have to live under certain limits. And so those are really good, valuable lessons we should be instilling in our kids. And when it comes to like they turn 16, that doesn't mean you're entitled to a car.
I'm going through this right now in our family, our extended family, with a young man who just turned 16. But for the last few months, he's been so angry and so upset. And his parents are going through divorce. But that's not why he's angry and upset. It doesn't appear. But he was angry and upset, it turns out, because he thought he was not going to get a car at 16 because his parents were going through divorce. So he's made everybody's life miserable. And as it turns out, it was all about getting the car at 16. And his dad got the car at 16 for him. And now he's really nice. You know what
I'm
saying?
Entitlement.
I mean, what is all that? That is wrong is what that is. Talk to me about what the entitlement means.
Well,
and what's wrong with that scenario that I just gave you that is real life.
That is. So entitlement means I deserve to have something just because I'm here. Kind of just because I exist. I deserve this. I don't have to work for it. I shouldn't have to contribute to it. It's just something I'm deserved for breathing.
Because I'm going to turn 16.
Right, for breathing. And entitlement's dangerous. We aren't entitled to anything in this life. And so when we let our kids think they're entitled, they get out of control quickly. And that's what they'll start doing for everything they feel entitled for.
Okay, I think I asked you last week to define entitlement because we hear that term when it comes to Congress about trying to stop paying so many entitlements, et cetera. Can you just help our audience, any member out there who doesn't understand what we're really talking about when it comes to entitlements?
Well, entitlement basically breaks down to a benefit that you believe you should have for just being you.
For not having worked.
Not having to do anything, but you deserve this benefit.
Just because you are you, and you're so cute. You are
so darn cute, yes.
You're so cute, and you just were born into this family, and you just deserve all that, right?
Absolutely. And so when we allow our kids to believe they should have all this without contributing and working and something, some effort on their part, we are really setting them up to fail.
Okay, this is just a huge point. I want to talk about this just a little bit more in depth. Why do parents do that? Why do they say, yeah, when you turn 16, son, you're going to get the car of your dreams and we're going to spend $20,000 on you or whatever it might be? Why do parents do that?
And that kind of goes back to their own childhood.
Okay.
And a lot of times, if we take it down to the root, it goes back to them feeling like they should have had, maybe they had a clunker and they were embarrassed by it, or maybe they didn't have a vehicle and they had to walk or take the bus, and they didn't want their kids to have those negative feelings.
Okay. So it does go back to what they experienced.
For a lot of people,
usually.
It does go back to that, their own childhood.
Okay, I'd throw another thing at you. Could it be that they want to impress those around them that, hey, look what I just bought my kid, you know?
And if they're in a status and in certain social environments, it absolutely can be that as well, that what way we show success is we all have the best. So I'm going to make sure my kid has the best so we can be successful for everyone.
Okay, and it also looks good in the community that you've got that kind of money, perhaps.
Oh, yes, it can. It can make you look like you're
like
in
you're
that,
really.
You're
yeah.
doing really good when your child has, you know, that $45,000 car. And I'm going to tell you what, you drive through high school parking lots in America, you're going to see some pretty expensive cars out there.
I totally agree. I've seen it and known it through the years. So consequences, we're going to talk more about that next week, because that's mm-hmm. a huge, huge thing. But let's just talk about isolate it with this kind of thing right here. A parent gets their kid a car,
mm-hmm.
and the child or the teen, it's not a child, but the teen really disrespects the car in that it wasn't their choice. Maybe it wasn't good enough. They wanted something better. And they just trash it. They don't care if they bump into things and have wrecks and whatever. It's just, it's not, they don't value it. That's my point.
Well, then my next question is, why do they have the keys to the vehicle?
But see, that is so true. And I totally agree with you, being a parent and grandparent. I totally agree with you. But for the listeners out there that go, well, you know, it's so easier for me if he can drive himself to school and bring himself home. I don't want to have to deal with that. And he refuses to ride on the bus.
Well, you know,
have you
funny.
Heard that? Because I've heard that for years.
I've lived this one. And so, yeah, here's the deal. The deal is you got to be the parent. And it's not convenient. Parenting isn't easy and it's not convenient. It's not a spectator
It's not
sport.
Convenient?
It is going to be inconvenient to teach our kids certain lessons.
That's right.
And I'll tell you what, I had a high schooler who had his vehicle and he broke my curfew. And when he went out to go get ready for school, he found a nice boot on the tire of his car and he didn't have access to his car for 2 weeks. I booted that thing. He had to go take the bus.
You're something else as a parent, Dr. Angel. I got to tell you. But I respect you. I got to tell you that. We've got to go to break real quick and tell somebody and have them tune in tonight for the rest of the show. Go ahead.
Professional service is what you will receive when you allow Marcia McAllister of Charles Rittenberg Realty to help find that perfect home or list your home for sale. With over 23 years of experience in the Tampa Bay area, you will enjoy a smooth transaction from start to finish. Call Marcia today at 727-417-0707. Now is a great time to buy or sell a home. Call Marcia McAllister at 727-417-0707.
This is Megan, an independent ambassador for Plexus, the pink drink. There is finally a healthy solution to help you lose weight. It's a most natural product that will burn fat, not muscle. People around the country are experiencing amazing results, and you can too. Check out my independent ambassador website for my contact info, testimonials, and product information at mkramer.myplexusproducts.com.
Bridge over troubled water. We used that last week at our break too. And you know what? There's hardly a better song for the troubled water in so many American homes these days. And maybe it's not this way in all the countries around the globe, but America, we're dealing with this.
Yes.
And we're dealing, it's an epidemic. And so if you just now joined us, we're in a new series, and this is part two of Teens Out of Control. And feel free to call people and say, hey, you need to check out this series, especially if you know they have teenagers that are causing a lot of problems at home. And, you know, with you being a PhD and a licensed mental health counselor, and you have all these counselors that you work with under you, and you do seminars, and you do all these things, Dr. Angel, you're probably greatest of all those things is that you've raised three young men, and you're still raising number three in an environment maybe that wasn't as easy as some, and for part of those years, single parenting and whatever. But you've really put some tough things down for your sons, all three young men, to really do, and I respect you wholeheartedly for, and because I've watched it now for several years, I've seen these young men, and I can tell you, they're fine young men, and consequences to their actions are, they know they're coming. I just had a talk with your youngest son a couple days ago about some consequences that he is receiving right now.
Yes.
And it was so interesting to me that he was just kind of teasing you a little bit playfully. Yeah, mom's a, you know, she's a hard butt or whatever you want to call it, you know. Mom knows how to get to me, he was saying. And, you know, some in that respect, anyway. I think it's really amazing and to be applauded when parents will take difficult decisions and hard actions sometimes that are inconvenient for the parent. That's what I'm trying to get to.
I agree with you, because parenting is not a spectator sport, and we have to be involved, and it's not convenient. It's not convenient to have to, you know, give a consequence and take something away, like their internet, where, you know, it keeps them quiet and occupied. Now they have all this extra time that you kind of got to deal with them in a different way. It's not convenient to have to, you know, take away their car and have to drop them off at school at 6:15 in the morning. It's not, but it teach the lesson that comes from that is far greater than the convenience.
So you're saying that a little bit of inconvenience, parents out there, grandparents, because a lot of grandparents are raising kids. Mm-hmm. So
yes, they
are. And you know, I'm not raising any of my grandchildren, but I can see how hard it would be if I were, you know. Just it's just a difficult thing for grandparents in particular, more so than parents, I think, in the regard that grandparents a lot of times feel sorry for the kid, maybe, who doesn't have parents or involved in their life very much, and they kind of make up for that sometimes.
Well, you know, it's funny because I see a lot of phenomenons with our grandparents. Sometimes it is that grandparents are supposed to be grandparents. They're supposed to be the fun ones. They're supposed to be the ones,
yeah,
that spoil and bring the gifts and let them do the extra stuff. And they had that role, and now it was taken from them, and now they have to be the parent, which is a hard switch
I've seen people that I know have to go through that.
Absolutely. So that switch of role, it's kind of unfair for them, because the grandparenting stage is a whole different stage than the parenting stage. And then you're right. Sometimes they do. They feel sorry for that child that they aren't with their parent, or they're going through all this, and they do try to make it easier on them to make it up to them.
Yeah. So the person who says, okay, I'm a grandparent, you just described my life, or a parent, and yeah, I have been way too permissive, I have not put down parameters, I've not put down boundaries, consequences, I don't even know what that word means, and there may be some people out there going through that. It's never too late, is it, to start?
No, it is never too late. Now, you're not going to go from having no boundaries to full-on boundaries with your kid in a week, but we can start with one. I always tell parents, take the most important thing. We're going to start with one thing. We're going to work on one thing at a time. First of all, you've got to learn how to be consistent with consequences. If you haven't been utilizing them, it's a learning curve for you and a learning curve for your kid.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And so you're not going to sit down and say, well, here's our top 10 rules now. We're going to have them. No, we're going to have one rule, and we're going to pick the most important rule, and then we're going to find a consequence, and we might have to play with that. You want your consequence to be what motivates your kid, and it should make sense to their behavior. So, you know, a lot of times parents' consequences in the moment, in the heat of their feeling,
yes.
And it's something outrageous, they're not following through with it, and the kid knows
you're grounded for 3 months, you cannot go anywhere, you cannot leave your room.
And they're like, well, that didn't work. Well, because you didn't use it effectively. And so what I find is parents so much are just trying to be their kids' friends.
That's the problem. That's the underlying problem. I was going to get back to that before you go on with this consequence thing about what is a good consequence, because so often the parent has to do some inner searching as to why they're so permissive or why they have allowed disrespectful talk, why they have allowed that child to whine and scream and holler and make the whole house miserable until they get what they want. It's like a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old who is out of control.
Right, but they're 15, 16, and 17. But it's the same principle as that temper tantrum we'll see a 2- or 3-year-old throw. Absolutely.
So the parent or grandparent that is allowing this kind of behavior must first, before, in my opinion, tell me if I'm wrong, but before they start administering these consequences, must take a look at themselves.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. What kind of relationship do I have with my kid? Do I sit and tell my kid my life's problems and stories? Do I think of them as the buddy? Am I hanging out with them and their friends? Because that's not
a parent-child
relationship.
We mentioned that last week, and that is not. What is wrong with that?
First of all, there's no parent-child relationship. It's peer-to-peer. It's buddy-to-buddy. And well, why would I have to respect that buddy and listen to that buddy? There's no the power is equal. In a parent-child relationship, there is a differential of power.
Okay. And so for the parent who just has never thought of that and tells people that my kid is my best friend, there needs to be a wake-up call.
Definitely, especially if your kid is a minor in your home. Now, once they're adults and have their family, that's a different relationship. And, yeah, a lot of times parents and their kids can have more of a friendship. They're not parenting them in the same way. But if you are using your kid as your friend, go get friends. That's what I'm going to tell you. Your child should never be your friend. They don't need to hear about your sex life, your dating life, your problems, your job problems. They don't need to know.
Why not?
Because that's not a parenting relationship. And you're setting yourself up for problems. You're, first of all, giving them to more than they can handle. Remember, our brain grows till we're 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So their brain is still growing and developing. They don't have the tools to handle what you're giving them.
Right. And so often the parent that wants the best friend in the kid, especially if there's marital strife,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to get the kids on their side,
mm-hmm.
parental alienation. Do you want to talk about that real quick? Because this is a part of this whole problem, especially when people are going through divorce,
yes.
separation.
So parental alienation, and yeah, it really happens with teens a lot too, is where a parent will do what they can to alienate the kids from the other parent. So basically for teens, what I've seen is, oh, this kid wants this car when he turns 16. Okay, I'm going to buy him the car, but you can't go see mom to have your car. Or I'm going to let you have all these name brand clothes, but you can't go see dad. Or I'm going to let you have no curfew and no rules, and you can hang out with your buddies and smoke pot. I don't care, as long as you're doing it in this house, but you can't have contact with your other parent. And so that's how they alienate them. They give them some sort of freedom that the other parent won't give, but to have that freedom means you can't be a part of that other parent.
I know a situation like this where a little 12-year-old girl was given a brand new iPhone that she wanted, expensive, whatever, and a password was put on that only the dad knew.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And that's alienating.
What's wrong with that?
Parents need to be able to check on their kids' electronic uses and should be checking on their kids' electronic use. That's called parenting.
Okay. So that's parental alienation when you are trying to keep the other parent from parenting.
Right. So what you're doing is manipulating that child, giving them something they want in exchange for not being a part of that parent.
Right. Right. And so all of that is in the effort to hurt the other parent.
Absolutely. And it's hurting Everybody.
It's actually hurting the kid,
isn't
it?
It's hurting the kids most of all, absolutely. Because kids need their parents.
Okay, back to the example you just gave of a parent that allows a teenager to smoke pot in the house and or bring alcohol in and have a party, or we're going away for the weekend, just don't tell the neighbors that we're not here, and you guys go ahead and have a party. Just be careful, don't break anything.
That's actually really common.
It is
common.
I can't
you the number of parents who sat in my office telling me, oh, I let my kids drink as long as they do it in the home where I can make sure they're safe. So drinking age is 21, so it's okay for the kids to break the law in your
home? And they're 13, 14, yeah. 15, 16.
So what you're telling your kids, it's okay to break the law as long as you're safe. So that's not a message we want to be sending our kids. It's not okay.
Right.
You know, there's a difference between we have a culture where we might have a glass of wine on a special holiday or religious thing. That's a different thing than letting my kids come and just have
parties.
Drinking in the house, right.
Because alcohol and pot and whatever, it's going to lead to other things, right?
Oh, yeah. And they learn to break the law. Yeah. I mean, I had one parent who came to me and she thought her child should be on ADHD meds. And I kept saying, your child does not qualify. They do not have the symptoms. So she started giving her teen daughter her other kids ADHD meds. And I said, so you just taught your teen that they can take someone else's prescription. And you know what she ended up doing? Going to school and getting pills from other kids. And they had a bigger problem on their hand.
Wow.
But she learned it from mom.
Wow. I'm glad you gave that example, because I think there's a lot of parents out there
think about the bigger lesson that behavior is teaching.
They're so lackadaisical mm-hmm. about what they're teaching their kid because they don't see anything wrong with that.
Right. Well, I think she should have it. I have this medication. So what? Because it wasn't prescribed to her. You know, it's not legal to drink under 21. Our kids shouldn't be drinking.
But so many parents have disrespect for that law.
Yes, they do.
And
absolutely.
So, as you just said, and I've seen it too, well, if they're drinking at home, then they're not out on the streets. But how long does it take before they are out on the streets?
They will be out on the streets. And they're not drinking alone, so now you're letting other people's children drinking in your home. You can have some issues with other people's parents because it's illegal to do this.
Okay.
And you taught your kids not to respect the law.
Right. Which is a huge problem here.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Okay.
Because before long, then they're stealing cars or stealing stuff from stores because the law doesn't really matter to them.
Let's go back to a point that you made a little bit earlier. So many parents find the easy way out. Look for the easy way out when it comes to dealing with troubled kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's been my experience. I've seen it. You've seen it. And if it means that I can get them to shut up for the evening, I'll let them be on their Xbox till 3 a.m. And then they have to go to school at 7.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. A lot of parents, and that's where they really run into trouble, is they want the path of least resistance now,
right.
But it builds bigger problems in the future because
yep.
there is no path of least resistance that's going to get you a positive result. They don't want to leave the grocery store when their three-year-olds are on that tantrum and take care of that problem outside because they want to finish their grocery shop, and so they'll give that kid that cookie to shut them up. I watch this all the time.
Sure.
But that kid's 15 and 16, and now they're still doing that same behavior. And you can't. Parenting is not about least resistance. It's about getting in there and having resistance and taking control of your house. I may not be able to control what my children do outside my home, but I can control what they do inside my home.
And as you begin to lay down certain boundaries and certain, you know, this is the way we behave, this is the way we don't behave.
Absolutely.
Then if you're maintaining it, if you're making sure and following through, this is a spiritual quote, but I read this the other day and it's really, I mentioned it Sunday as I was preaching. There's no breakthrough if there's no follow-through.
Exactly.
You want to talk about how that applies here?
Well, and with follow-through with parenting, it is being consistent. It is having a consequence. It is following through with that consequence. It's finding that accountability for that child. That child is never going to learn how to do it right without that. That's how we learn.
So if we want breakthrough in our kids, we want them to break through into adulthood as well-balanced,
mm-hmm.
honest, trustworthy people in society, people that are not liars and cheaters and stealers, and that's what we want for our kids, there must be the follow-through when they break those
Absolutely. Rules. It has to be. Without it, what we're teaching them is that rules don't apply to you. Behaviors don't have consequences, and you can do whatever it is you want. And then we're crying when they're doing what they want.
Okay, so talk to me about why our country, our society, has so many people that are raising kids that don't think it's important to teach these basic moral values like truth and like hard work and earning something.
Well, I think it's a variety of things behind that. First of all, I think some of it stems back to people's own childhoods and them feeling like they didn't have or have access to the things they wanted and still holding those negative feelings and not wanting to carry that into their kids. I think another reason we're seeing that is there are a lot of single parents, and it's huge in our culture. And they're working, and that's for a single income to make the money to support a family takes a lot of energy and effort, and they're tired.
Tired.
They're tired at the end of the day. And then they may be fighting that other parent who has a whole different set of expectations and roles. And so they just feel like it's a battle they can't win, so why try? I'm tired. I've exerted my energy. I just can't. I think some of it is this whole parent. There was a whole parenting paradigm that started in the 90s about not telling your kids no, because we want them to have good self-esteem.
I was just
going to
bring that up. Please talk about that, because I wanted to bring that up next.
So there was this whole wave of self-esteem development that happened in the 90s where telling our kids no would hurt their self-esteem. So we don't say no to our kids. Well, that's not realistic. Life says no all the time. And when our kids don't hear no, they don't learn boundaries. No is a basic boundary.
How did that even get started in the 90s?
It kind of came through from this whole, well, there's a whole shift. There's always, every generation has their parenting shifts. There's generations of, corporal punishment. There's generations of how, kids are to be seen and not heard. Like, there's every generation has how they parent. And so the generation of the 90s really wanted to improve self-esteem, because research was showing adults that were really struggling with their self-concept and self-esteem. So in order to build their self-esteem, we're going to swing this pendulum all the way over here, and we're going to give them everything they want, and we're never going to tell them no, and then they're going to have a healthy self-esteem. But what they did was raise a generation of narcissists, because now these kids are adults.
Define narcissism.
Narcissism is, it's all about me. I'm entitled to everything I want. I'm the only one who's important. And so we had this generation of these kids who struggled with narcissism. So the world is my center. I don't have to work for anything. No one tells me no. I get what I want, when I want it, how I want it. And it's not working. So what are these adults now are like living with their parents, playing video games. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the number of parents that come in with 30-year-old kids that still live at home and playing their video games all day and supporting them. Mm-hmm. That's not okay.
And what do you say to a parent who is allowing that in their home?
You are letting it happen. So you're the only one who could unlet that happen. Mm-hmm. But that's not okay.
It's totally
not okay. It's absolutely
not okay.
And so,
and a lot of these same kids you're talking about have
their
substance.
Own kids. Right now they have kids, yeah. But mom and dad are raising the grandkids, because they're not working, they're not contributing, they're not doing. And so they're enabling them to be the way they are, which is unhealthy and not how life is.
Exactly.
And so we're seeing this roll around. They were so concerned with self-esteem that they swung the pendulum that now I look at most of our, transitional adults, and they are way too high a self-esteem because they think it's all about me.
Wow. And I agree with you entirely. And narcissism is that preoccupation with self,
mm-hmm.
right?
All about
Being totally self-absorbed. And so this can be part of the reason why so many homes are out of control, because people don't like to, or parents, a lot of parents don't like to cross the kid who's really causing trouble in the home. They don't want to face those issues. They want to, and what happens is the siblings that are not acting out, behaving like this, suffer, don't you think?
Oh yeah, they absolutely suffer. And so what the other kids in the home learn is, I get attention when I act bad. And if I want attention, I need to act bad. So we'll see a lot of parenting behaviors from the sibling. I worked with one family. They had four kids. The oldest one was the one that was out of control, which was control. They fought. They had money, so they placed that child in a residential facility. And as soon as that child left the home, guess what happened to the other kids? They started doing the same behaviors. Because it was a family problem, not just this child. They learned it all in the background. So they started up with that. And I'm like, what are you going to do? Send all your kids away? Or are you going to start working on this with the family?
Wow. Did they hear you?
Yeah, they all are in therapy. As a family.
As a family.
As a family.
Because one out of control kid like this sets the tone for the house.
The whole family.
And it's easy for younger siblings to follow along
they
and do
follow,
just like
or
that.
They follow or they get left out and they're not getting the care and nurture they need because the parent doesn't have the energy for it. And so they are feeling, they go real internal. We'll see a lot of depression from those kids. We'll see those kids just don't feel love. They don't feel a part of their families. They hate the kid who is acting out. They will maybe not talk to this kid for as long as they cannot talk to this kid. I've watched them in adulthood just have nothing to do with that sibling who caused that ruckus growing up because they feel like they stole everything from them.
And rightfully so. Don't you think that mm-hmm. you can understand why they felt that?
Yeah, very valid feelings.
They also have to deal with their own issues.
Yes.
But we can see how that develops mm-hmm. so easily.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. This is important stuff we're talking about
tonight.
And that's
why I tell you it's a family problem. It is not just that child who's acting out. It happens with the structure of the home. Now, you may have a well-structured home, and you still may have a child acting out, but most 9 out of 10 times, there's not a structure in the home.
Okay.
So sometimes it's a temperament of a kid that it doesn't matter what your structure is, they're still going to try. But when you still have structure, you still have control. They don't have control.
But I've seen it in homes, and you have too, I'm sure, where a troublemaking child that causes a lot of problems is the favorite of mom or dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't, they kind of skip by. They kind of skate by yep. on all whatever, don't they?
Yes, they do. And they get away with it. Everyone else can see it, but the mom and dad in the house can't see it.
So when you point that out as a therapist to a parent, what happens sometimes?
I get a lot of defense coming back at me a lot of times. They don't want to see it. They don't want to know it. And I think they know it. They just don't want to know it kind of thing. But in order for I look at them, I said, the way you're doing things isn't working, obviously. So let's start trying something different or it's never going to get better.
And I guess I'm just curious, do they fight you on that a lot?
I do get a lot of times they will fight. And a lot of times, if they're not ready to do the work, I'm not ready to work with them. So I'll discharge them. When you're ready to do the work, here's my name and number, call me.
Okay. Because when you say define, do the work, what do you mean?
Doing the work is a lot of work on the parents' part, setting that family structure, taking back your house.
Okay, let's back up to structure. What kind of structure? What are you talking about?
How we're going to treat each other in this home.
Okay.
Are we going to, how we're going to have respect. We're not commanding and demanding. You don't tell me what you're doing. You ask me what you're doing and not letting that happen. And if so, there's a consequence. If you can't talk to me respectfully, you don't talk to me. Taking away phones, taking away internet, taking away cars, taking away designer clothes, whatever it takes to get that child to respect that line of system in our house.
Do you find that a lot of parents, though, just let down after a while because it's just too hard?
It's exhausting. And when you first start doing it, it gets worse. And mm-hmm. then they come to me, well, it's worse, Dr. Angel, than when we walked in the door. Okay, stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse because they're banking on you giving up.
Sure they are.
So they're going to make it really hard. So they want you to give up. So then they have their control back. So
exactly.
Once you show them, you know, I'm in it to win and I'm in it to stick through this, you're going to see results.
And I know that a lot of kids would make fun of this, but it's a loving thing to do. And it's really showing that the parent does love and care about that child enough to go the extra mile and set up boundaries and do things and have consequences, even though the kid may not be able to see it at the time.
And
right?
They don't see it at the time, trust me there. But it is very loving. It takes a lot of time, energy, focus, concentration, resources to have structure in our home.
How about an idea? Let's say that a crisis has happened. The parents are saying, okay, we got to do something about this. What about a meeting with, like, the grandparents or people that are around, the support staff, whatever they are, you know, and say, it's a new day here. We're going to try this. Let's all get on the same page. Not just try it. We're going to do it. I don't,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
I think those are great ideas. I mean, the more support we have, the more success we have, too. And so,
right.
You know, if that your kid is cursing you out and, you know, talking down at you, and we really want to work on, I'm not going to be talked to that way. And I don't think, you know, we're going to set a limit. He's not talking to any of us this way, or she's not doing that. What are we going to do when that happens? And getting a family system, I totally encourage that.
Yeah, because I think that's where it breaks down a lot of times. I've seen it, you know, in homes where the maybe one parent is working on this. The other parent is not cooperating and causing a lot of trouble. The grandparents are not cooperating, etc. And so the child knows it's just a matter of time until it's all going to break down.
Right, till they wear down the system.
Sure.
But I will be an encourager that if you are in a divorce house and you have one system and your ex has a different system, your child can learn your system. Even when the ex has a different one. And you can still hold that bar high. I know. I've done it.
That's huge what you just said. Because I think a lot of parents would fight you on that and say, no, if everybody can't be on the same page, it's not going to work. Why are you saying that one person being consistent,
yep,
can make the changes?
Absolutely. You can hold that bar to the level you need that bar to be, no matter what freedoms they have at the other house or what's happening at the other house. Because in this roof, this is how it's going to work. And so you can do it. You just got to be consistent. And we're not fighting the other system. I am just setting my system.
Okay. But then the child goes, wow, I'm it's a lot better over at dad's. I'm just going to stay there.
And that's refuses. Okay. But you're not going to get to decide after a while that you're coming back here. If that's your choice, that's your choice. And I'm okay with that. And they've all known that. And not one of them has pulled that, even though they had no rules over there. And they have rules with me.
Right.
But they also have structure. They have meals every night. They have what they need. They have help with homework. They have, you know, all the other stuff
Those
that comes with
Those things are very
it.
Important. Absolutely. We got to get out of here. And this has been part two of Teens Out of Control. And we're going on with this next week. And Dr. Angel, just for a quick little summary, I mean, if you want to hit three bullet points before we get out of here.
I will hit three bullet points. If you have an out-of-control teen, they are not out of control. They are in control of your home. And if you want to get control back of your home, you need to take that control back as a parent. Start setting consequences and expectations. And don't be a prisoner to your child. Take it back.
Don't be a prisoner to your child. All right. This has been
Dr. Angel
and Mama Mac. Go Yard! And we're going to be right back here next week at 6:06 p.m. on Thursday night. Catch us on Starcom Radio Network every Saturday and Sunday at 12 noon. This show will be on again. All right. And catch it on the podcast here at TanTalkNetwork.com. Podcast Go Yard. See you. Bye.
Good night.